You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Sheboygan, Wisconsin is the bratwurst capital of the world, but not the bratwurst capital of America. We'll find out about a friendly brat dispute with a city in Ohio. Now, the new census numbers are in. They show that the U.S. population went from 308 million in 2010 to 331 million in 2020. It's an increase of 7.4%, the slowest period of growth since the 1930s. But the country is more racially diverse than ever. For the first time, the white population declined in numbers. Meanwhile, Hispanic and Asian populations went up, though there are some changes in the way those numbers are measured. Similar themes here in Wisconsin. The population rose to 5.9 million, up 3.6%. The data will be used to draw new state legislative maps and congressional districts and for lots of federal funding. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to Wisconsin's population changes? What have you noticed in your community over the past decade? Did you move to a different part of the state? Did you move here to Wisconsin from another state? Did you leave Wisconsin? Are you seeing fewer young people in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. David Egan Robertson is a demographer in the Applied Population Laboratory at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Hello, Rob. It's good to be back on with you.
What is your What's your overall reaction to Wisconsin's changing demographics in this new census?
Yeah, it was, I guess you'd have to say, since I've been looking at Wisconsin's population for, gosh, I guess close to 25 years now, the census count was pretty close to what people expected in terms of those of us in applied demography who do estimates and projections. As you mentioned in your intro, I think that the state grew about 3.6% this past decade, and that was the smallest percentage gain since the 1980s. And if folks are around in the 1980s, or if they weren't, that was the era of the Rust Belt recession, when we had a lot of out-migration. What happened this past decade is that birth rates were falling steadily through the decade, a decline that has been happening nationally pretty much since the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009. So the population we were gaining in this past decade, what we call natural increase, the difference between the number of births and the number of deaths, that's one of the big contributors to population change. That actually fell quite sharply compared to the last couple of decades.
And David, that points to sort of another thing we learn in the census is not just the raw number of people, but things like how old they are. What do we see when it comes to the age of people in Wisconsin in this new census?
Yeah. Well, this first release of data doesn't give us a lot of age detail, unfortunately. It only provides population ages 0 to 17 and then 18 and over. So we don't get a lot of detail, for example, even the breakout of people, say, 65 and older. It's not available through this release. There are going to be additional releases later this year that'll give us more of that fine detail. But even just, with the data we have, we've seen a continued decline in the share of the state's population being under age 18. Over the last 20 years now, it's gone down a little over 6%. But there's also some geographic differentiation there, where over the last 20 years in counties that are metropolitan, those that have communities of 50,000 or more, under 18 population has fallen 4%. But in non-metropolitan counties where there isn't a big population center, the percent of under 18 kids has actually fallen by 13%. So the rate of decline has actually been three times greater in non-metropolitan counties than metropolitan ones in Wisconsin.
And David, what stands out to you when it comes to where Wisconsin is gaining population and where it's losing population?
Yeah, well, certainly Dane County, once again, And this has been true for several decades. Dane County has really grown quite well. They've actually, over the last three decades, have basically been averaging about 15% more people every decade. So now, sort of cumulatively, if you were to compare it to 1990, it's probably a bit more than 50% larger than it was in 1990. There was a little bit of loss in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County this past decade. And that was really the only sort of major county that lost population in the state. But it's really kind of a part of the historic pattern of suburbanization, that people, more people leave the city of Milwaukee and generally Milwaukee County, and move into the surrounding suburban counties. So even though there's a slight loss there, it's nothing alarming in terms of sort of their long-term history.
Talking to David Egan Robertson, demographer at UW-Madison, the Applied Population Laboratory there, looking at the new census numbers and what we're learning about Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions or thoughts at 800-642-1234. And maybe your decision to leave or enter a community here in Wisconsin. Pat joins us now in Madison. Pat, hi.
Hi there. I had actually just moved to Madison earlier this year after living here previously, and it's looking like the cost of living is accelerating much faster than wages are here. So I'm being forced to leave basically just to go establish a family somewhere else, just because how expensive Madison's becoming.
And Pat, do you know, if I may ask, where you're going to end up?
Right now I'm moving down to the southeast part of the United States. And that seems to be a popular choice too, because cost of living there is much lower.
Pat, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. And David, it reminds me of the Yogi Berra quote, nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. The population is going up in Dane County, as you said. At the same time, it's driving some people, the higher cost of living in particular, like Pat, out of a community. What are you watching for? I know we just had the census. What are you watching for with that trend in the next 10 years?
It'll be interesting to see. I think a large driver of Dane County's recent growth has been particularly in sort of post-college age, age 25 to 34, where as demographers, we like to sort of divide people up into five-year age groups. We've seen a tremendous amount of growth in those particular age groups. And Pat rightly points out, and anyone who lives here can see just how incredibly fast housing prices have risen and apartment prices have risen here in the Madison area. If those keep rising, it might be a case where we may not have quite the same number of young adults moving into the Dane County area.
Thanks again for that call, Pat, at 800-642-1234. David, a lot of attention on the racial makeup of the country and the state in this new census. Before we even get into the details, though, I understand the census is saying be careful making apples-to-apples comparison when it comes to a racial breakdown between this census and past censuses, censi. Why is that? What is different this time around?
The main difference was that this was the first census where the Bureau switched to an online response option. And I don't know, Rob, if you remember, if you filled out your form online or not, but what they did was, because people could fill it out online, they gave a lot more space in effect for people to list information about their racial background or their heritage if they wanted to identify specific heritages. In the past they had like basically 30 boxes and you had to kind of squeeze in your racial and ethnic background into a pretty limited space. With switching to an online option, which a lot of people use, I think it was close to 70% of people in the country use the online response form. Basically, I think they allowed like 200 spaces for people to put information. So people were giving much more detailed information. And then there were the Census Bureau itself. And the census is partly, you know, of course, people filling out their forms, but then it's also, okay, how is the Bureau, you know, taking all this data, you know, it's 300 million plus people and 125 million or more households. How are they processing those responses? And so they actually sort of expanded the number of characters that people put in for their race and Hispanic origin backgrounds. And so they were able to get a much more detailed sense of particularly people being multiracial. You know, there has been a lot of, there have been a number of media stories saying, you know, the country is far more multiracial. Well, yes, that's true, but it's also in how the Bureau decided, in effect, to measure people's race and ethnic origin.
We're talking about the new census numbers just released last week and what they say about Wisconsin and the country as a whole. David Egan Robertson stays with us, demographer in the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how the state's population has changed over the decade? Did you move to Wisconsin from another state? Did you leave a community? What are you seeing in your community? Are people moving in, moving out? Are you seeing fewer young people in your part of the state? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're digging into the new U.S. Census data, making some sense of what the numbers say about Wisconsin. Over the past decade, our population grew to 5.9 million, an increase of about 3.6%. A lot of that growth centered in Dane County. David Egan Robertson stays with us, demographer in the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest about the census and your own observations, what you're seeing in your community, and your own choice. Did you decide to up stakes and move over the last 10 years? Why? Call 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, David, we were talking about the racial and ethnic makeup and why this census did things ultimately a little differently than in the past. That said, are there notable changes that stood out to you when it comes to ethnic makeup here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, one interesting thing, and this was somewhat predicted as well as the Bureau did estimates over the past decade, is that the Hispanic population has now become the largest minority group in the state. And at the 2010 census, and again, measurement changed a little bit, but at least for the Hispanic Latino population, probably fairly consistent with what they did in 2010. The Hispanic population was just under 6%. African Americans were about 6.2%. So the two minority groups in terms of percent of the total population were pretty close to each other. But now with this census in 2020, the Hispanic population is about 7.5%, and the African American population stayed about at 6.2%. I mean, when you do look at the age difference, there are some interesting things which, you know, as more data comes out, we'll be able to sort of tease out more sort of data nuggets as we go forward. So the Hispanic population under age 18 is about 13%. But for people age 18 and over, it's only just over 6%. So sort of the proportion of Hispanic Latinos is twice as high in kids as it is in adults. And you see that fairly similar in some other minority group patterns as well.
Let's go back to our callers now. Matt is with us in Viroqua. Matt, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to, this is just anecdotal observation. I live in Viroqua in Vernon County in the Driftless, and it seems like a lot of people are moving here from the West Coast and from the cities, from Madison, Chicago, and Minneapolis. And it seems to be a lot of people who can telecommute, who are coming here and keeping their jobs in the, you know, they're bringing their jobs from the urban areas and finding, you know, they're just craving a rural lifestyle and less hectic experience, you know, for raising kids and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's what I did in 2007, moved here when my kids were young, and now my kids are out of high school. And it just seems like something that's really happening here, and it's spilling over into the neighboring small towns, into Lafarge and Biola and all that sort of thing.
Matt, thanks a lot for sharing that experience. And David, we saw a lot of Wisconsin rural counties lose population, but not all of them. How do we start to sort that out?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the Viroqua area has, I guess I would best describe it as an anomaly. You know, it's been interesting over the last couple of decades, a number of counties along or near the Mississippi River have actually had positive net in-migration, whereas a lot of rural counties are really struggling and either have, net out-migration, more people moving out than in. That observation is there are certain places or areas around the state in more rural areas where actually they do have more people moving in than out. And it was interesting to hear his comment about people may even be coming from quite a long distance, like the West Coast, and relocating here.
Thanks a lot for sharing that, Matt, at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Michael with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. To the point, I've lived in Wisconsin for over 30 years. I was born here. And I just know in the last, 10 years or so, there has been somewhat of a trend for Wisconsin's young people to move out of the state, sometimes after graduating college, sometimes before. And I know it's been talked about on NPR and WPR before. And being myself a youngish person on the low end of 30, personally, I've seriously considered leaving the state at multiple times in the last 10 years. And probably would have if it weren't for family ties, just because it's so frustrating to see, Minnesota, our neighbors, and Illinois doing things like passing cannabis legislation and the Tavern League and Wisconsin Republicans just refusing to do anything. So I'm kind of wondering, how that trend with the sort of youth exodus.
I gotcha, Michael. Thanks a lot for the call. And David, Michael might have heard you and me talking about this in the past. What do we know about what Michael is seeing younger people moving out of the state? I know of what you're saying, we may not have that exact data, at least in this new census, but what do we know?
Yeah. Again, once we get more detailed data about people's ages and can look more closely at what happened in this past, decade, we'll have a better sense of really what happened for the state. There's been this long-term pattern I always like to think of Wisconsin with it. I mean, Wisconsin really does have a large public education system compared to a lot of other states. And so I always look at it as, well, we're basically importing college students. They come here, they go to college, and it's the case where a lot, you hear it anecdotally and it shows up in the data. A lot end up, moving to Chicago, sort of in, that time of age 22 or 23 through about 30, or move to the Twin Cities. So they're sort of the two big, obviously, two biggest locations where students who just graduated move out. But we also do see Wisconsin has a pretty steady pattern of more people moving back in when they get into their 30s. And as the caller mentioned, there is that sense of family ties to Wisconsin. I haven't seen data recently, but it probably still holds true that of all the states in the country, Wisconsin has, I believe, like the fourth highest percentage of natives who still live in the state. And, you know, that may mean they may have moved away and moved back, but the state's always been really good at being able eventually to retain all of its original population.
Thanks a lot for that call. You and our caller both mentioned Minnesota, and we often compare and contrast Wisconsin and Minnesota. We had a growth rate of 3.6%. Minnesota, I think, was over 7% growth rate. What's the deal there? Why is Minnesota growing faster than Wisconsin? What do we know about that?
Yeah. I haven't looked really thoroughly at how the census results came out for Minnesota yet, but one thing is they do have a much larger international migration component. The Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul and the surrounding area, they have really very large, you know, international migrant populations. And so I think that's really, you know, accentuating their growth there. I mean, their birth rate patterns and, you know, mortality patterns are not that much different from Wisconsin's. So it's mainly, I believe, the international migration where Minneapolis, St. Paul in particular, you know, is really a magnet for a lot of new international migration.
David, just in our last half a minute or so, what's the next bit of information you're excited to see?
The next release from the Bureau will give us that age detail that applied demographers really like to have. So we'll be able to look at the population in five-year age groups, and some larger geographies actually look at single years of age. So that'll start giving us a sense of how much, the population is changed in terms of migration, in terms of age groups like 25 to 29 and 30 to 34, 35 to 39, so those, you know, key young adult groups, and see how much of the change in the last decade's population can be attributed to those age groups.
David, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Rob.
David Egan Robertson is a demographer in the Applied Population Laboratory at UW-Madison. We talked to him about new census data and how Wisconsin's changed over the last decade. Coming up, Brat Wars between Wisconsin and Bucyrus, Ohio. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, some national pollsters have noticed a slight dip in President Biden's approval rating in recent days. We'll talk about what the latest data says about where Wisconsin voters stand. Now, Sheboygan, Wisconsin is the bratwurst capital of the world, because of course it is. But the bratwurst capital of America is a distinction that goes to another town, Bucyrus, Ohio. How is it possible to be the best in the world at something but not the best in the U.S.? To understand this paradox, you have to go back over 50 years. The story features a brat festival so rowdy it got banned, a county judge, and of course, lots and lots of bratwurst. Dan Higgins is a food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. He dug deep into the great brat debate. Dan, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me back.
All right, in this corner, we've got Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Can you talk about the origins of Sheboygan's celebration of its bratwurst dominance?
Sure. I think you could just say Johnsonville, right? And that should pretty much end the debate. I mean, they're kind of the ones that brought it to America. You know, they're the ones who brought it all the way across. But I mean, even long before that, there was a brat day that was, to celebrate Sheboygan's, the city's, you know, founding 100th anniversary. It goes back to, 1952 and 53, and it went so well the first year. They kind of kept doing it. It kept growing, and then kind of got out of control. And they actually had a referendum to end it at one point in the late 1960s. There, the 1966, and then it kind of came back for a little while as a German festival through the 70s, and eventually kind of morphed back into the brat days that it is today. So that's kind of where the whole Sheboygan really got its start, with having a bratwurst festival. And I think, you know, in terms of, you know, sausage makers, there's just a lot of them, you know, beyond Johnsonville, there's, you know, a lot, there were like something like 50 meat markets back in the 40s and 50s that would make the bake bratwurst along with lots of other, you know, German sausage sausages for people. So that's kind of Sheboygan's claim to it there.
But here we are. Here we are, though. Bratwurst, as you said, the Bratwurst Day in Sheboygan got too rowdy. It was on hiatus for a couple of years. And then looming, like a vulture, Bucyrus, Ohio. So what's their deal? Why do they claim to be a brat town?
They again, another community that happened to have, like, in Ohio. They're kind of in northwestern-ish Ohio. And a community that happened to have a lot of German settlers. So they passed down, you know, German recipes throughout, you know, and that was like late 1800s or so when a large contingent of German immigrants settled that area, passed on their bratwurst making through the years. And it's just kind of, they really didn't get a sausage maker on scale, something like Johnsonville that's gone national. But, you know, they had a lot of pride, obviously. You know, you always feel, you know, like this is the way grandma made it or grandpa made it or whatever, you know. So they decided, late 60s there, to have their own bratwurst festival. Whether they knew Sheboygans had gotten canceled or not, that's not clear, but so they fired one up and happened to just kind of catch some national attention pretty early on in their second or third year there, caught and started to make some national news of having their German festival, which then got back to Sheboygan and sparked this little back and forth bratwurst delegates, shall we say, or ambassadors going back and forth between the cities in 1970 and 1971 to try and convince the other side that they should be the bratwurst capital, not the other person.
And a Wisconsin judge even got in the game with a non-official, non-binding proclamation from an actual judge. Yep. What happened?
Yep. Yeah, he wrote up a judgment, cease and desist order, in essence, kind of, you know, making the claim that, you know, was Sheboygan is the bratwurst capital. And then they took them three delegates, the mayor of Sheboygan, the president of the Sheboygan Press newspaper, a member of the Sheboygan, what's the word I'm looking for? Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. They went off to Bucyrus to during their broad festival to deliver this in essence cease and desist order that was very, you know, not obviously legally binding by any stretch, and read that off. And they brought some bratwurst with them to try and convince the good folks of Ohio that Sheboygan has the superior bratwurst.
And so we end up Sheboygan being called the bratwurst capital of the world, but Bucyrus the bratwurst capital of America. Is that where things still stand today in their official or whatever semi-official designations?
Yeah, right. As official as any of this can be, right? And meanwhile, there's, you know, how many towns in Germany, you know, that would probably take issue with this. But I think that just kind of eventually, after they kind of had some fun with this back and forth and kind of taking shots at each other's bratwurst, you know, Sheboygan accusing Bucyrus makers of stuffing theirs with sawdust and the Bucyrus contingent saying that the Sheboygan bratwurst are watered down. I think after that, you know, they had their fun with it, the back and forth. Eventually it seems like that's just kind of way it settled in, is, you know, Bucyrus is claiming bratwurst capital of America and Sheboygan holding on to the world title, I guess.
Now, Sheboygan held its Bratwurst Fest earlier this month. Before I let you go, Dan, what do you put on your brat?
Maybe some mustard.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually about it for me.
Same.
But I don't, I mean, honestly, they don't, if it's a good bratwurst, it doesn't even need the mustard, really.
Dan, thanks a lot for sharing the story with us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
Dan Higgins is a food and drink reporter for USA Today Network Wisconsin. He told us about the great 20th century bratwurst debate between Sheboygan and Bucyrus, Ohio. Right now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Today a story about guiding boats on Lake Michigan into safe harbor. Here's producer Steve Gotcher.
In The Lighthouse, a recent thriller by filmmaker Robert Eggers, solitude leads to madness for two lighthouse keepers. But solitude was rarely an issue at the range lights in Bailey's Harbor. WPR's Norman Gilliland brings us the story from eastern Door County.
In 1869, when the range lights were built, Bailey's Harbor was considered the only safe harbor north of Milwaukee. The town was a busy logging center, shipping cordwood and cedar posts, poles, and hemlock bark to other Great Lakes ports. Ed Miller shows people through the range lights. He wears the visored cap and double-breasted navy blue coat that were the garb of lighthouse keepers.
The last keeper here was Henry Gaddy. He was here 27 years, as long as his predecessors combined. When Henry arrived in Bailey's Harbor, he was single. He was considered a very eligible bachelor because he had a pay of about $600 a year, and he came with a house, so all the single girls in Bailey's Harbor were interested in Henry.
As for Henry, he did tie the knot and celebrated in a typical Wisconsin way.
There's a picture we have of Henry with about eight other gentlemen. They're all holding a mug of beer. Henry's in his lighthouse keeper's uniform, and the waiter's in a white uniform. They all have full mugs of beer, and the label on the bottle that the waiter's serving is Miller Beer. So it was Miller time in 1901.
Some things never change. Restorations of the lighthouse have turned up some surprises. Under the parlor floor, newspapers from 1944 and 1945 with screaming headlines and big photos of the late Franklin D. Roosevelt and his successor Harry Truman and Lauren Bacall.
We're going to head up the stairs that the lighthouse keeper would have went up many times, starting in the evening, throughout the night, and the following morning. First, he would light the lamp right before dusk, and then he would go up several times to adjust and trim the wick. Because if he didn't adjust the wick, he got a smoky flame, which sooted up his lens and reduced the light output of the lens. So lighthouse keepers got the nickname wickies because they were always adjusting the wick. And then in the morning, he would extinguish the light right after the sun came up. And then by 10 o'clock, he had to have everything all polished up and ready to go for the next evening.
Now we get to the heart of the matter, a bright object about the size of a snare drum.
So in the lantern room, we're looking down the range light boardwalk at the front range light. And the original lens that was in the range light was a fifth order Fresnel lens. And it was such that it cast the light out about 6 or 7 miles out over the water. Today we have a modern lens. It's still lit, and it's an active aid to navigation. We're back on the lighthouse list in navigation charts as a useful lighthouse.
To get to the lower part of the range lights, you follow a 950-foot boardwalk toward the lake. Along the way, until the autumn snow falls, you'll see tamarack, wood lilies, yellow lady slippers, blue flag iris, and one or two shoots of asparagus gone wild. In 1930, the lamps were replaced by automated electric lights, and the keepers became a thing of the past. Although solitude was never an issue at the range lights of Bailey's Harbor, they were and are serious business on a lake that has swallowed boats for as long as there have been boats.
WPR's Norman Gilliland talked about the Bailey's Harbor range lights on the eastern coast of Door County. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Find more Wisconsin Life on wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Steve Gotcher.
Coming up, pollster Charles Franklin joins the show to talk about the latest data on what Wisconsin voters think of the 2020 election, vaccines, and more. That's next here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+. Last year, our public schools saw an exodus of children who didn't show up in person or online. Join Jen White for a new series looking at who's going back to school and who's not. That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, according to the latest poll from Marquette University Law School, 49% of Wisconsin voters have a favorable view of President Joe Biden. That number hasn't changed since the last time they asked back in October, but it comes as the poll averaging website 538 has recorded small dips in Biden's national approval ratings in recent days. Charles Franklin is director of the Marquette Law School poll. Charles, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Rob.
Before
Happy
we get
Monday.
To you as well. Now, before we get to the latest poll, a remarkable few days in Afghanistan, what do we know about where Americans stand on the idea of U.S. pulling all troops out of that country?
Sure. Well, this is based on national polling, and of course, with events this weekend, is undoubtedly going to be fluctuating. But 3 weeks ago, in July 24th polling by ABC News, 55% approved of the withdrawal of troops from there. It had been asked twice earlier in the year, in April at 55% and in May at 62%. So I think across those three polls by three different pollsters, you saw pretty solid support for it. There are other questions that show a closer result. There's some questions that show about 60% saying we should pull out, but still showing something in the 20s thinking that we should keep troops there at the same levels or maybe reduced levels. Obviously, given the results that are going on there now and the unknowns of what happens over the next months at least, public opinion could easily shift.
Now, turning to your newest survey, what do Wisconsin voters that you polled think of the job President Biden's doing?
Overall, 49% approve, 46% disapprove. That 538 national average had him at about 50.3 when we were in the field doing our survey last week. It's dipped to just a shade under 50 today, I believe. But clearly, that's a narrow net positive reading for him. Since we had not polled earlier in the year, it's our first reading of him as president, so we can't say whether it shifted here in Wisconsin. The details, though, are a little bit underwater, 46 approve, 48 disapprove on handling the economy, but a pretty good rating on handling COVID, 54% approve, 42%. Disapprove. So a bit of a mixed pattern with Biden and a narrow net positive approval.
Turn to a couple other political figures. Senator Ron Johnson up for re-election if he chooses to run again next year. What did we see on his approval ratings?
A little bit of a decline. This time, 35% favorable, 42% unfavorable, and 23% that said they didn't know or didn't know enough about him to have an opinion. But that's a shift from October of last year when it was 38 favorable, 36 unfavorable, and 26 without an opinion. So he's gone from a net plus 2 positive rating to a net minus 7 negative rating now, a net negative rating this time. Tammy Baldwin also dropped, though, from 44 favorable to 40 this time, and her unfavorables went up by 3 points. So the other senator, the Democratic senator, also experienced a drop, though she remains by 1 point net positive.
Also up for election next year, Governor Evers.
And there we do have a time series. We can compare him. He's at 50% approve, 43 disapprove now. That's exactly the same as we had him back in October. And as with Biden, his COVID approval numbers are better than his overall. On handling COVID, 54% approved, just 39% disapprove. That's actually a bit better than it was in October when it was 52-45.
And one more name I'll throw at you before we turn to some issues, former President Trump.
He has dropped off a bit. 37% have a favorable opinion of him, 55% an unfavorable, only 7% say they lack an opinion about him. But in October, it was 44 favorable, So it's dropped 7 points there. Unfavorable in October was 54, not much change. And only 2% lacked an opinion of him then. So since leaving office, 5% are saying they don't have an opinion of him now that did have an opinion back when he was in office.
Talking to Charles Franklin about the latest Marquette Law School survey, looking at a bunch of high-profile political figures in the state and issues facing the state. And on a related note to the former president, you asked voters what they thought about the accuracy of the 2020 election. What kind of things did you find out?
Yeah, 67% were confident that the vote had been accurate in Wisconsin. 31% had doubts about that, said they were not very or not at all confident in the results. That's a little better for Wisconsin than it is for the country as a whole, where the split was 60 confident, 38 not. As you'd expect, there's a big partisan gap here in Wisconsin on the Wisconsin results. Among Republicans, only 29% are confident, 71% are not. But that reverses for independents, 72 confident, 26 not. And Democrats are nearly unanimous, 97-3.
One of the big issues out there, the race to get more people vaccinated before the Delta variant takes even more hold in Wisconsin. What did we learn about the people who are unvaccinated and whether they're considering getting the shot?
Yeah, we have 68% told us they've been vaccinated, 26 said they've not, but an unusually high 7% declined to discuss it. That may be because of it being a medical issue, but it may also be because it's a politicized issue. Incidentally, the Centers for Disease Control said at the end of our survey that 68% have been vaccinated, so we're exactly where the CDC is reporting on the rate of vaccination. But of those unvaccinated, 49% said they definitely would not get the vaccine, and another 27% said probably not. So you're looking at something around 75%, three-quarters, of the unvaccinated who are really pretty strongly set against getting the vaccine. We also see a party difference. 45% of Republicans have been vaccinated, 71% of independents, and 87% of Democrats. So there's quite a party gap here on something that is directly related to people's health.
It's back to school season. You also asked about people's views of public schools after a rough year with a lot of remote learning and growing pains as that happened. What did you learn from people's opinions on public schools?
Some of this is a little surprising. Satisfaction with your local public schools actually is higher now than it was in January of 2020 before the pandemic began. It's 69% satisfied now, 22 unsatisfied or dissatisfied. In January last year, 2020, it was 59-33. So satisfaction's up a little bit. Public school teachers get a 72% favorable rating. Asked if schools have reopened too fast or too slow, 54% say they've opened at about the right pace. 26% say too slow, 13% say too fast. So on that mix of issues, I think schools look pretty good after a year that was very difficult. On the other hand, support for increased funding for schools is down a little bit compared to a year ago. 52% would raise spending for schools. 43% are more concerned with holding down property taxes.
Charles, thanks as always for sharing some of your results with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Rob.
That's Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll. He was with us today to talk about Wisconsinites' views of elected officials, how they feel about vaccines, and more. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 7:30, a doctor joins the show with the latest info on COVID-19, the Delta variant, and what it all means for kids. That's coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show. Up next is news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then lots of us keep things to ourselves, but our secrets can harm us even more than they harm the people we keep in the dark. Sometimes we'll talk to a researcher about what people don't tell others and why. and we'll hear reports from some of our listeners about the kind of secrets they've kept or encountered in their lives. Remember, you can follow all these conversations online all the time at WPR.org. Listen live there or check out our extensive archives. Or you can download the Wisconsin Public Radio app and listen to the Ideas Network, our News and Classical Music Network, and more. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.